The hallway of the small South Beach Hotel was quiet when the call came in. It was just after dawn on March 18, 2021, and a housekeeper pushing her cart noticed a door left slightly open. She knocked. No answer. Inside, a young woman lay still on the bed, the room dim except for a thin line of sunlight slipping through the curtains. The woman did not move when first responders tried to wake her. By the time detectives arrived, they knew her name. Christine Engelhart, 24 years old, on vacation from Pennsylvania. The night before, she had walked along Ocean Drive like thousands of other spring break visitors. Bars were crowded. Music rolled from open doors. Cameras showed her with two men she had just met. Hours later, she was found alone. Investigators needed to understand how a simple night out turned into a fatal series of choices and who had been with her in those critical minutes. Chapter 1, The Room at Dawn. The hallway was quiet when the housekeeper reached the second floor. She was used to early mornings, but something about the open door made her stop. She pushed her cart closer and called out. No one answered. She stepped inside and saw a young woman lying still on the bed. The curtains were barely open, letting in a thin line of morning light. It cut across the room and stopped at the woman's shoulder. The housekeeper backed out and called the front desk. Within minutes, a supervisor arrived. They tried calling out again. The woman did not move. Her skin looked pale, and her breathing, if there was any, was too faint to notice. They phoned emergency services. The call ended fast. The dispatcher said help was on the way. Paramedics arrived and took the lead. They checked her pulse. They tried basic steps to revive her. Nothing changed. One of them asked for her name. They looked through her belongings and found a Pennsylvania driver's license. The name read Christine Engelhart. They noted her age, 24. They wrote the time on a simple form and left it near the foot of the bed. Detectives arrived after the paramedics stepped aside. They took in the scene before touching anything. The room was small, a single bed pushed against the wall, a chair pulled close to a nightstand, two plastic drink cups next to a stack of napkins, a few pieces of clothing on the floor. On the desk was a hotel key card and a phone with a dark screen. Nothing looked like a struggle, but nothing looked right either. One detective walked toward the bathroom. The shower was dry, and the towels had not been used. A small plastic bag sat near the sink with makeup items inside. There were pill fragments on the counter. The detective pointed them out to the crime scene techs. They took photos from every angle and talked quietly as they began to collect evidence. A second detective checked the phone. It needed a passcode to unlock. He placed it in an evidence bag. He lifted the key card and checked the number. It matched the room. He noted the time listed on the door lock log displayed near the handle. The key card had been used during the night. The exact times would be pulled later from the hotel system. Hotel security joined them and answered questions. They said there had been noise complaints the night before. Two guests on the same floor had reported loud voices around 2:30 in the morning. Security staff knocked on the door, but got no answer. The noise stopped after a while, so they moved on. No one expected anything serious. The detectives stepped into the hallway to talk with the hotel manager. He explained how full the hotel had been because of spring break. Every room booked. Constant foot traffic through the lobby. Many guests visiting bars along Ocean Drive until late. The manager said that Christine had checked in alone the day before. She had not reported any problems. Detectives asked for surveillance footage from the lobby and from the hallway. Security staff transferred the files to a drive. The detectives planned to review them once they returned to their office. They wanted to know who had entered the room with her during the night. They wanted to know if anyone had followed her back from the beach. Crime scene techs worked through the room in a slow pattern. They lifted fingerprints from the nightstand, the door handle, the desk, and the bathroom counter. They collected the drink cups and the napkins. They took samples from the linens. They bagged the pill fragments from the bathroom. Everything went into labeled envelopes. They moved carefully and spoke in short sentences. Detectives stepped back inside the room after the techs cleared a path. They looked at Christine again. They wrote down first impressions. No obvious signs of injury, no sign of defensive wounds, no marks that pointed to a fall. Nothing that explained why her life ended in that room. They knew toxicology would be important. They knew the timeline needed to be rebuilt from the start. By midday, they had enough to move to the next step. They left the room sealed under police control. The body was taken to the medical examiner. The detectives walked through the hotel lobby and stepped out into bright sunlight. Spring break visitors crowded the sidewalks. People moved from one bar to another in swimsuits and cover-ups. Music rolled from open windows. Cars honked. Tourists shouted to friends across the street. It was hard to believe that a death investigation was now underway, just a few steps from all of it. The detectives headed to their office. They sat in a small room and began pulling the footage. They watched Christine enter the lobby the night before. She looked relaxed. She carried a small purse and wore a simple top and shorts. She walked with a steady step. She talked briefly with a staff member at the counter. Then she left the hotel and turned toward the beach. The timestamp showed it was early evening. The next clip came from a bar several doors down. She was inside, standing near the rail overlooking the sidewalk. She talked with two men. They appeared to be around the same age. She laughed and leaned in to hear them speak. The bar was crowded. The lights inside gave the footage a warm tint. The timestamp matched the early hours of the night. Another camera caught them walking on Ocean Drive. Christine stood between the two men. They stopped at another bar. At one point, she appeared to stumble. One of the men held her arm. People moved in every direction. It was the kind of scene that could hide anything in plain sight. Detectives wrote down the timeline. They added questions next to each entry. They wanted to know how much she had to drink. They wanted to know what she might have been given. They wanted to know if the men stayed with her the entire time or if someone else joined them. They also wanted to know how long she was seen alive after leaving the last bar. By late afternoon, they had tracked her return to the hotel. The hallway camera showed her walking toward her room. She moved slowly. The two men were at her side. One of them held her waist to steady her. They reached the door and went inside. The timestamp would later match the time the key card was used. It was after 2 a.m. The footage showed both men leaving the room sometime later. They left together. They walked down the hallway and headed toward the elevator. Christine did not appear again. The next time anyone entered the room was when the housekeeper made her morning rounds. Detectives paused the footage and sat back. They had a clear outline of the final hours. They still needed details from inside the room. They needed toxicology results. They needed to identify the men in the footage. They needed to piece together everything that happened after the door closed. They contacted the medical examiner for early notes. The examiner said full results would take time. The body would go through standard procedures. Toxicology would be run. Samples would be tested for common party drugs. The examiner also planned to check for injuries not visible at the scene. The detectives knew they would not have answers until the report was complete. They called Christine's family next. The call was difficult. Her family lived in Pennsylvania and had last heard from her the day before. They knew she was on a short trip with plans to enjoy the warm weather. They did not expect this news. Detectives explained what they could. They promised updates. They confirmed that someone from the victim services team would reach out. The detectives spent the rest of the day sending images from the footage to other units. They needed to identify the men fast. They believed the two men were the last people to see Christine alive. They believed that whatever happened in the room started long before the door closed. They believed that the case was moving from a sudden death investigation to a criminal one. As the sun set, the team reviewed the evidence table. There were labeled bags containing fingerprints. There were envelopes with drink cups and napkins. There were pill fragments ready for testing. There were notes detailing every step. They had a solid starting point. They also had pressure. The case involved a visitor. The case involved spring break. The case involved the kind of night that many people believed would never lead to danger. The detectives closed the door to the room and ended the day with one shared thought. The timeline was clear. The cause was unknown. The last people seen with the victim had not yet been found. The case hinged on what they would learn next. Chapter 2, The Profile, The Lab, and the First Breaks. Christine Engelhardt grew up in Pennsylvania and stayed close to her family and friends. She worked steady hours, kept a small circle of people she trusted, and liked simple routines. Her decision to take a short trip to Miami came after a long winter. She told friends she wanted warm weather, a few days near the beach, and a chance to reset. The trip was not meant to be a big event. It was a short break from the cold. Those who knew her later said she did not take risks. She planned trips. She asked questions. She preferred quiet bars over loud clubs. Her decision to visit Miami during spring break surprised a few people, but they knew she wanted sunshine. She booked a modest hotel room near the beach. She told her mother she would check in every evening. She kept her phone charged and carried a small purse when she went out. Detectives gathered all of this information on the second day of the investigation. They contacted her family again and spoke with friends who knew her travel habits. They also reviewed her social media posts from the days before the trip. She had taken photos on the beach, smiling with bright sunlight behind her. She looked relaxed and free of worry. There were no signs of conflict. There were no signs of distress. While detectives worked on the profile, the medical examiner began the next steps. The body had been transported to the lab the day before. Full toxicology tests were ordered. The examiner noted no obvious external injuries. The initial scan did not show significant trauma. The examiner explained that the full toxicology panel would take time. It would test for alcohol, common sedatives, and substances sometimes used in nightlife settings. Results could take several days. Back at the station, detectives reviewed the hotel hallway footage again. They watched how Christine walked during the last hour she was seen alive. Her steps slowed. Her posture leaned forward. The two men on either side of her looked relaxed. One of them kept a hand on her arm as they approached her room. She did not appear fully steady. Detectives wrote brief notes. They needed to know whether she had become impaired from alcohol alone or if something else had been introduced. The next step was to identify the men. Detectives sent images of their faces to units that specialized in pattern matching. They also contacted Florida agencies that monitored repeated spring break incidents. Within hours, one of the men was tentatively identified from past encounters with officers. The name was forwarded to Miami Beach Police. Detectives began pulling the man's previous records, if any existed. They needed to confirm the match before moving forward. At the same time, two uniformed officers canvassed establishments along Ocean Drive. They showed printed still shots from the footage to bartenders and staff members. One bartender remembered the group from the night before. He said the woman seemed friendly. He also said she appeared to be drinking mixed drinks that the two men brought to her. The bartender could not recall whether she ordered anything herself. The place had been crowded. The noise made it hard to track individual conversations. Another witness, a server working near the entrance of a nearby bar, remembered seeing the group outside. She told officers that Christine stumbled at one point. The men laughed and held her up. The server assumed she was simply drunk. She did not report anything unusual. Officers wrote down her statement and passed it along. These accounts helped detectives build a clearer picture. They added the information to the timeline. They still needed the toxicology results. Without them, they could not determine whether Christine had been deliberately drugged. They kept the question open and moved on to digital evidence. The analysts assigned to the case worked through the night. By morning, they had pulled key card logs from the hotel. The room had been accessed twice after Christine entered it. Both entries matched the times the two men were seen leaving on surveillance footage. There were no other entries. No one else had gone inside. Detectives circled the timestamps. They now had confirmation that the only people confirmed to be in the room were the two men and Christine. Phone records came next. Her phone had last connected to the hotel network late that night. One of the men's phones had also connected briefly near the room. Investigators had enough to consider both individuals persons of interest. They still needed to locate them. The detectives requested additional footage from nearby businesses. Some of these cameras captured clearer angles. One clip showed the men walking down the street after leaving the hotel. They appeared calm. They walked without haste. they cut through a side street and exited the main pedestrian area. Detectives studied the route. They traced it to a bus stop and then to a larger roadway. They checked nearby gas station cameras and found another clip. A car picked them up. A third individual was behind the wheel. This discovery pushed the case toward a new direction. Detectives asked if the men had met the driver earlier in the night or if the pickup was arranged. They examined footage and found no clear sign of contact between the men and the driver while at the bars. This suggested either a planned ride or a spontaneous call afterward. They requested the license plate number from the gas station footage. Once they had it, they ran the plate through automated records. The car was registered to a rental company. Detectives contacted the company and asked for the rental agreement. The company provided the name, payment details, and schedule. The renter lived in Florida. Detectives now had three people to locate. They sent out notices and began planning interviews. Meanwhile, the medical examiner called with preliminary toxicology results. The early screen showed alcohol. It also showed the presence of a sedative often associated with impairment. The examiner cautioned that full quantification would take longer. Detectives knew that even the presence of such a substance shifted the case toward a criminal act. They updated their notes. They prepared for interviews. Before they found the suspects, detectives needed more from the lab. Crime scene techs processed the drink cups found in the room and on the nightstand. They swabbed the rims. They checked for fingerprints. They tested trace elements in the liquids still at the bottom of the cups. It took hours to complete. When the results arrived, they confirmed fingerprints belonging to Christine and two unknown men. Lab workers matched one fingerprint to the man already tentatively identified. The other set of prints belonged to someone not yet in their system. Detectives now had stronger grounds to move forward. Interviews began the following morning. Officers located the first man at an apartment several miles from the beach. He answered the door and looked surprised. He agreed to come to the station for questioning. Detectives asked him about the night. He said he barely remembered it. He said everyone had been drinking. He said he thought Christine had been fine when he left the room. He denied giving her anything besides mixed drinks. Detectives pressed him for details. He repeated the same lines. He said she wanted to party. He said she did not seem upset or unwilling. He insisted that nothing harmful happened in the room. Detectives listened and took notes. They did not contradict him. They asked him to clarify timelines. His story shifted twice. He changed the order in which events occurred. He changed what time they arrived at the hotel. He changed whether she was steady or needed support. These inconsistencies were important. They did not accuse him of lying. They simply gathered his words. After hours of questioning, he asked for an attorney. The interview ended. The second man took longer to locate. Officers visited several addresses. They checked bus records. They checked workplaces. Finally, they found him at a friend's apartment. He declined to come voluntarily. Officers transported him to the station. He seemed nervous. He kept his hands in his pockets. He looked toward the floor as detectives walked him into the interview room. Detectives introduced themselves and began with basic questions. He said he did not know Christine. He said he did not remember meeting her. Detectives showed him still shots from the bar camera. He looked at them. He nodded. He then said he remembered her speaking with his friend. He claimed he did not say much to her. Detectives noted his tone. He spoke quickly. His sentences ran short. He claimed he stayed in the hallway when they walked her to the room, but the footage contradicted that. Detectives showed him the hallway clip. He paused. He said he must have forgotten. He said he was tired. He said he had been drinking a lot. The detectives shifted their questions. They asked him what Christine drank. They asked him how much she had been given. They asked him whether she accepted anything unusual. He said she drank whatever was handed to her. He said he could not remember specifics. When asked why she seemed unsteady, he said she had been dancing. Detectives wrote down his answers. They noted the excuses. They noted the changes in his statements. By the end of the interview, he had contradicted himself several times. He claimed he left early. The footage showed otherwise. He claimed Christine walked normally. The footage showed her stumbling. He claimed he and his friend went straight home. The footage showed them taking a ride from the gas station. When detectives asked about the ride, he stopped talking. He asked for an attorney. The interview ended. Later that afternoon, officers located the third person, the driver from the gas station footage. He said he had been called to pick up the two men. He claimed he did not know what happened inside the room. He said he never entered the hotel. He said he drove them to a residential area and then went home. Detectives took his statement. It was consistent with the footage. They set him aside as a witness rather than a suspect. Detectives now had several pieces that lined up. The timeline was supported by footage, key card logs, and witness accounts. The toxicology report pointed toward a sedative. The drink cups had fingerprints belonging to Christine and the two men. The interviews revealed inconsistent stories. There was enough to continue building the case. The next step was to finalize the victim profile. Detectives wanted a clear record of Christine's state of mind before the night began. Her friend said she did not use illicit substances. They said she rarely drank heavily. They said she liked conversation more than parties. Detectives included this in the case summary. It helped establish a natural baseline of behavior. They also reviewed her phone records. Her last messages showed nothing unusual. She had made dinner plans for later that week. She had responded to friends back home. She had taken photos on the beach. There were no signs she planned to meet strangers. Nothing suggested she sought out risky situations. Detectives gathered the final pieces of surveillance footage. One clip near the beach entrance showed her walking alone early in the evening. She looked confident and aware. Another clip from inside a bar showed her leaning over a drink with the two men nearby. In one frame, a hand reached toward her cup. The angle made it impossible to see what was done. Detectives marked the clip for further analysis. It was not proof, but it raised questions. In the afternoon, the lab released more detailed toxicology findings. The sedative level was significant. It would have impaired coordination and judgment. It could have caused confusion and memory gaps. It could have left her unable to protect herself. Detectives added this to the case file. It strengthened their concerns. They reviewed everything once again. They needed to decide how to move forward. They believed they knew what happened, but they needed definitive linking evidence. They needed DNA confirmation. They needed the full breakdown from the lab. They needed the prosecutor to review the materials and determine next steps. Before leaving for the day, detectives spoke with Christine's family once more. They explained the progress. They said the case was moving ahead. They reassured them that investigators were working every hour. The family listened quietly. They asked few questions. They wanted to know one thing, whether Christine had suffered. Detectives said they did not have full answers yet. They promised to share more once the medical examiner completed the report. The national media began picking up the story around this time. News outlets reported an unidentified female tourist found dead in a hotel room. They mentioned spring break crowds. They mentioned rising concerns about safety. They also mentioned that two men had been seen with the victim earlier in the night. Detectives worked to keep details controlled. They did not want speculation to threaten the investigation. Inside the station, the atmosphere shifted. The case felt heavier. Every new piece of evidence pointed to a coordinated act. Every contradiction from the interviews added weight. The presence of a sedative raised the stakes. Detectives moved carefully. They documented every step. They avoided speculation. They stuck to verified facts. By the end of the second week, the full toxicology report arrived. It confirmed alcohol. It confirmed a significant sedative. It outlined how the combination would have affected her. It left little doubt that she was incapacitated. Detectives forwarded the results to the prosecutor. The forensic lab also completed DNA testing. Samples taken from the room matched the two men. Their fingerprints were on the cups. Their DNA was on the linens. Their presence was now scientifically confirmed. Detectives organized the evidence in a clear timeline and prepared a formal briefing. The prosecutor reviewed everything and asked for the final interview logs. Detectives provided them. They also supplied witness statements, surveillance footage, key card data, and lab results. The prosecutor asked for one final task: verify whether either man had attempted to contact anyone about the incident afterward. Analysts reviewed phone data, Neither man made any emergency call, neither attempted to report anything. Their phones showed searches unrelated to the case. That absence spoke loudly. Detectives were now ready to move forward. What came next would shape the final movement of the case. It would decide whether there was enough proof to confront the suspects formally. It would decide whether warrants could be issued. It would decide whether Christine's family would have clear answers. The case had reached its turning point. The lab had spoken. The interviews had spoken. The timeline had spoken. The next step would show whether justice could take its first real form. Chapter 3, The Break, The Warrants, and the Aftermath. The conference room at the Detective Bureau was quiet when the team gathered. It was early morning. The lead detective placed a stack of reports on the table. He looked around at the group. Everyone understood why they were there. The investigation had reached the stage where evidence could no longer be treated as preliminary. It was time to determine the next steps with the prosecutor. The prosecutor entered the room carrying a binder packed with documents. She greeted the team and took a seat. The lead detective opened with a clear timeline. He laid out each point from the start of Christine's final evening to the discovery in the hotel room. He reviewed the surveillance footage that showed her entering the bars alone and leaving with the two men. He reviewed the timestamps showing them walking her back to her room. He reviewed the key card logs, confirming the room had only been accessed by those three people. He then moved to the toxicology results. The prosecutor read the numbers. The sedative level was significant enough to impair judgment, balance, and awareness. It would have made Christine vulnerable to any further risk. This aligned with the footage that showed her leaning on the men for support. After that came the DNA results. The prosecutor read through the confirmation that the two men were present in the room. Trace DNA was found on surfaces near the bed. Fingerprints were found on the cups. They matched samples taken from both men. There was no indication that anyone else had entered the room after them and before Christine was found. The prosecutor asked one question. She wanted to know whether either man attempted to call for help at any time during or after the night. The lead detective explained that phone records had been reviewed. Neither man called emergency services. Neither contacted hotel staff. They left the room and walked to a waiting ride without showing signs of concern. Their behavior did not match the explanation that they believed Christine was simply sleeping. The prosecutor took a long moment to think. She closed the binder and placed both hands on the table. She said there was more than enough evidence to move forward. She approved the request for arrest warrants. Detectives nodded. They had been waiting for this moment. It was the turning point they needed. The next step was planning the arrests. Detectives coordinated with patrol officers and special units. They reviewed the addresses where the two men had been found earlier. They checked recent movements. They checked vehicles, workplaces, and social circles. They wanted to move quickly. They wanted to avoid any chance that the suspects would flee. The first arrest happened just after noon. Officers approached the apartment where the first man had been located during the interview stage. They surrounded the building and knocked on the door. He answered, surprised to see them again. Officers informed him of the warrant. They placed him in handcuffs. He did not resist. He looked down at the floor as they escorted him out. The second man took longer. He had not been at the previous address. Officers searched other known locations. They checked with friends. They checked with relatives. Eventually, they found him walking near a store several blocks away. Officers approached from both sides. They informed him of the warrant. He reacted with frustration. He insisted that he had done nothing wrong. Officers said they were not there to argue. They placed him under arrest and transported him to the station. Both men were processed and placed in separate holding cells. Detectives informed the prosecutor that the arrests had been completed. Arrangements were made for court hearings. Media outlets quickly learned of the developments. Reporters gathered outside the station and asked for statements. Officers released only factual information. Two men had been arrested in connection with the death of Christine Engelhardt. No details beyond that. Inside the station, detectives prepared the final case file for the prosecutor. It included the timeline, toxicology report, DNA results, interview transcripts, and surveillance footage. The prosecutor reviewed the file again in full. She prepared the initial charges to present before the judge. The first court appearance took place the following morning. The two men were brought into the courtroom separately. Cameras lined the back wall. Christine's family attended through a remote broadcast arranged by victim services. The prosecutor outlined the charges and the evidence. She emphasized the toxicology findings. She explained the timeline showing how vulnerable Christine had been by the time she returned to the hotel. She presented the DNA confirmation placing the men in the room. The defense attorneys asked for leniency in the initial hearing. They argued that the night had been chaotic and crowded. They said the men had no intention of harming anyone. They said their clients believed Christine was simply intoxicated and resting. The judge listened but focused on the strength of the evidence presented. The judge denied bond for both defendants pending further review. Detectives returned to their office after the hearing. They felt the weight of progress, but also the weight of the loss that had triggered the case. This kind of investigation always carried a human cost. A family was grieving a daughter who had gone on a simple vacation. A young woman's final hours were pieced together through footage and forensic tests. It was not the outcome anyone wanted. The next step was to prepare for the prosecutor's long-term strategy. She needed to build a case strong enough to withstand court scrutiny. Detectives worked with lab analysts to re-verify all results. They reviewed every piece of footage again. They checked timestamps. They checked witness statements to ensure accuracy. They made sure every document was logged correctly. They prepared to answer questions from the defense. Christine's family arrived in Florida several days later. Detectives met with them privately. They explained each step of the investigation. They walked through the timeline from the night Christine left her hotel lobby to the moment she was found. They explained the forensic work. They discussed what was known, what was proven, and what remained under examination. The family listened quietly. They held each other's hands. They asked steady, clear questions. They wanted to understand how the case would proceed. The detectives spoke with compassion. They explained that the process could take months. They explained that trials were often complex. They assured the family that the evidence was strong. They said that the case had a clear direction. They promised that they would continue working closely with the prosecutor to ensure nothing was overlooked. Over the next several weeks, the case moved forward through formal stages. More witnesses were interviewed, more footage was analyzed, additional lab reports were completed. Everything supported the same central conclusion. Christine had been impaired by substances she did not knowingly take and left vulnerable in a room with two individuals who made no attempt to seek help. As the prosecutor prepared for the next phase, public attention grew. Media outlets reported the facts in steady waves. They discussed spring break safety. They highlighted the challenges local officers faced while managing large crowds. They interviewed community leaders who spoke about the need for stronger regulations and better public messaging around nightlife risks. The broader conversation began to shift. Tourist safety became a major theme. Questions were raised about monitoring bars, improving hotel security, and strengthening emergency response protocols. Local officials announced they would review current practices. They promised to explore new ways to protect visitors, especially during high traffic seasons. Christine's family, meanwhile, met with victim advocates who guided them through the legal process. The advocates explained court procedures and timelines. They connected the family with counselors. They helped coordinate travel when necessary. They made sure the family had clear communication with the prosecutor's office. At the station, detectives continued refining the case file. They prepared detailed charts showing the movement of each individual throughout the night. They attached maps indicating bar locations, camera placements, and the distance between the last stop and the hotel. They created a master grid linking timestamps to lab results. This visual layout helped the prosecutor prepare for trial. The final major development came when the medical examiner released the complete autopsy report. It confirmed everything the detectives had suspected. It listed the cause of death and explained how the combination of alcohol and sedative created a dangerous level of impairment. it confirmed there were no natural factors that explained the death. The report provided a clear medical understanding of what had taken place. The prosecutor incorporated the report into the case. She held a meeting with detectives to finalize the narrative structure. She needed the clearest path from evidence to accountability. She wanted the timeline tight and supported by multiple sources. She wanted to avoid unnecessary speculation. She wanted facts only. The trial phase moved forward in stages. Motions were filed. Evidence lists were submitted. Both sides prepared to question witnesses. The court set a schedule for hearings. Detectives practiced presenting their findings. Lab analysts prepared to explain toxicology results in simple, precise terms. Christine's family returned to Florida for one of the central hearings. They sat quietly in the gallery. They watched as the prosecutor outlined the evidence. They listened to the defense argue that the night had been confused and unpredictable. The prosecutor responded by showing the footage of Christine stumbling as the men held her arms. She showed the timestamps, confirming the three entered the room together. She showed the logs showing no calls for help. She showed the toxicology chart confirming the sedative level. The judge accepted the evidence for trial. As the case advanced, community groups organized events to discuss visitor safety. Local leaders met with tourism officials. They worked on campaigns promoting awareness of drink safety, personal security, and emergency contacts. Hotels reviewed their hallway patrol policies. Bars discussed adopting clearer lighting and camera placement. Beach patrols increased during busy weekends. Christine's case began shaping local policy conversations. It became an example of how a night out could turn into a complex criminal investigation. It forced people to ask how to reduce such risks. It encouraged larger conversations about responsibility, consent, and monitoring. Months after the arrests, the prosecutor scheduled the final hearing before trial. Detectives reviewed the evidence one last time. Nothing had been overlooked. The timeline was sound. The forensic results were clear. The witness accounts were consistent. The case held together from every angle. Christine's family spoke with the prosecutor privately before the hearing. They said they wanted the truth presented exactly as it had been discovered. They wanted a clear picture of what happened. They wanted a process that respected their daughter. The prosecutor assured them that every piece of evidence would be treated with care. During the final hearing, the judge reviewed the full case file. He listened to the prosecutor's summary. He reviewed the medical evidence. He read the interview transcripts. He watched key parts of the footage. When he finished, he set the case for a full trial and thanked both sides for their preparation. Outside the courthouse, reporters waited for statements. The prosecutor addressed them briefly. She explained that the evidence supported the charges. She said the case would proceed. She reminded the public that the victim deserved respect and that speculation did not help anyone. She concluded by acknowledging the grief of Christine's family. Reporters asked detectives for comments. They kept their responses factual. They said the investigation had been thorough. They said the next steps would take place in court. They did not elaborate. Christine's family returned home after the hearing. They carried the weight of the case with them. They continued to receive updates from victim services. They watched the news reports. They waited for the moment when the full truth would be presented in court. In the months that followed, the case influenced new safety measures. Hotels added better security reviews. Bars began training staff to watch for impaired guests. Police increased patrols along areas known for late-night crowds. Local organizations launched awareness campaigns. Brochures appeared in lobbies and at rental counters. They carried simple messages: stay aware, stay with trusted people, and seek help at the first sign of concern. Christine's story became part of that message. She had come to Florida for a short vacation. She trusted that she could enjoy the beach and return home safely. Her death reminded many people that simple nights out required more awareness and more support from the community. As the trial date approached, detectives prepared to testify. They reviewed their notes. They practiced explaining the forensic process. They stood ready to break down the timeline. They understood the responsibility that came with presenting evidence in such a sensitive case. They wanted to honor the truth. Christine's family prepared as well. they spoke with counselors who helped them manage the emotional strain. They reviewed the information they had been given. They asked questions. They held on to memories of Christine as the person she had been, not the person she became in the case files. When the prosecutors stepped into the courtroom on the first day of trial, they carried the full weight of the investigation. They carried the evidence, they carried the timeline, they carried the responsibility to present the facts clearly and respectfully. Whatever the outcome, the truth had been built carefully, step by step, through witness accounts, forensic results, digital analysis, and steady investigative work. It was the culmination of months of effort. It was the final attempt to bring clarity to a night that had spiraled far beyond what anyone expected. The case would move forward. The questions would be answered. The court would decide the final outcome. And in the years that followed, Christine's story would remain a reminder of vulnerability, responsibility, and the ongoing need to protect people who simply want to enjoy a night out in a place far from home. It would also remain a reminder that justice, when pursued carefully, could bring some measure of truth to families left with sudden loss.